You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guests on this hour are Helen and Chris Kaplan. It's good to have you here this morning, Helen and Chris.
It's good to be here.
Make sure I'm looking at the right one of you while I'm saying your names. This was going to be a single person show, but we decided since you both showed up that we're going to do a couples interview. So the way we start the show, when it's more of a couples thing, is who are you, but also how did you meet? But let's try to stay with the who are you piece and just to get a picture of each of you separately and then a little bit about how you kind of connected in life.
You go first, Chris. I knew that was coming. Who am I? I'm still discovering who I am.
Good. You're my, yep. Most of the rest of the world.
Yeah.
If truth be told, I guess.
Who are you, Helen?
Now that's not a way. That's not a chance to deflect the question. I know. We're going to have some of this today. Yes, I can already see. Yes. So what are some of the qualities that you aspire to? Some of the experiences that you value about the life that you live.
You know, I want to be a good human, and in terms of being a good human, I want to really give back to my community. And I do that through some volunteer work. Mm-hmm.
What kind of volunteer work?
Sure. So I do a couple different things. One is Habitat for Humanity. Mm-hmm. Whenever there's a women's build, right. I like to be there. And the other is I am on the board of Green Star.
Uh-huh.
So I'm the vice president of the board right now.
Cool. And what is it, how did you drill down? The response to that question is that I want to be a decent or good human being. What made you drill it down to that kind of simplicity?
I think it's important to give back. Community service is important. Uh-huh. I taught my kids that as they were growing up. When they were growing up, I volunteered with Kiwanis, and I dragged them to so many chicken barbecues. they do know how to hand out sodas at a chicken barbecue for sure.
Right. And so good is a verb. You do something.
Yeah.
To make the world a little more whole.
Make it a little better for somebody else.
Yeah. And I'm not going to be totally, I don't believe in total altruism. It does make it, we're doing it for some reason.
That makes me feel good, too.
So,
absolutely.
And people struggle sometimes with this question, but the one of the biggest struggles I've noticed is that people want to talk about the quality of life they aspire to more than the labels that they've worn. And some people would just prefer to talk about the labels. Those are easy handles, and you can segue into other stuff. But the quality of service or being human or whatever is something that it's a little harder to talk about. It's not the first thing that comes to mind when we say the question, who are you? I've had several guests over the years that have answered in just that way. Thank you, Chris. So, Helen, who are you?
You know, I've been trying to figure this out. I think I'm different things to different people.
Yeah, and you probably are different things to yourself at different times of day or the life or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what I hear from people who don't know me very well is that they perceive me one way.
Uh-huh.
And then over time, they perceive me often the direct opposite way. So I think, and I haven't figured out why that is yet, but I'm extremely different depending on who you are. And I feel fairly consistent inside myself.
Right.
But I think my responses or how I, the roles, the hats I have to play, kind of just like everybody dictates how I am in different situations. And it can look really, really disparate.
So how would you describe that? What are some of the different situations, and how do you find yourself shifting gears or just being sensitive in ways that you wouldn't have to be in the other situation?
Well, in my personal life, I actually feel like I defer quite a bit to my spouse, although she might not agree with that, but I am okay with that.
And she cannot agree with it, and it can still be true, and she can agree with it, and it cannot be true. I mean, it's all sorts of...
Right, and I just liked, you know, I often, because she's older, and she's had some experiences than
older.
I can defer, and I feel like, you know, there's a wisdom at times that I don't have. Yep. And then other times I feel like people are looking to me. Mm-hmm. In my professional life, the role I play in the community, I often have my team, the people mm-hmm. that work for me, asking me to make important decisions. So,
or to be a force to be reckoned with in their life.
Sometimes.
Well, I mean, that's what a decision is it sets some things from which mm-hmm. people can build.
Yeah, but I can really be quite the opposite, where I'm very deferential and very much like, you make this decision. So those two are really contrasted for me in my life. And it's not always like professional life, I'm this way, and personal life, I'm that way. But I know that about me.
Well, from one moment to the next, it's important to be able to change your approach, because there are people who need to act, and you need to not direct them. They will not own their action if they are directed.
That's true.
And there are times when you need to give a person something to respond to that they haven't, that they have to come to terms with authority or with just structure or limits.
True.
It's just, these are all judgment calls.
Yeah, definitely.
So how did you become aware that you not only did this, but that it's okay to do it, to be these different things in different settings? Because it's hard sometimes for people growing up to come to accept that.
I think I've become increasingly aware of it in the job that I have now, in the leadership position, because I've had to be so much more directive, or at times authoritative.
Right.
And it's not really how I've ever had to be. I'm actually somebody who is really good at harmonizing, both in my singing and in my personal life. Like, I know how to harmonize well. So to have to take the lead is a new role, or to have to kind of, that's really what brought it to the forefront for me, is this new role in my life.
What made it so that you could make the choice to do that? What compelled you to choose to do that? Because some people would have left the job.
Right. Well, what made it? That's a good question, Eric. I think I felt like I had to, for the sake of the people around me who are working in the team who lost a leader and I think needed anchoring.
Right.
That they needed it. And then the people we serve are so vulnerable, and it's such an in need population that if you just take away that key person.
And what is your role?
So I'm the clinic director of the Alcohol and Drug Council.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, the opportunity came to me a little over a year ago to be clinic director, and it wasn't a role that I was aiming for. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had been in supervisory positions there, but I hadn't actually been at the helm of that.
Right. And I think it's hard. I don't say so much that we don't so much change as that we discover things about ourselves that we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that, I think, mostly when we are in love, in the sense that in a relationship of, we really want the best for somebody else or someone else or some other organization. And that allows us to open up in ways that we wouldn't otherwise. I mean, that's kind of what I'm hearing in your story a little bit. Maybe I'm projecting too much, but
no, I think there's a love, and I think also pride. There's a pride.
Yeah.
I mean, I take care of that place, and I have taken care of that place and the people who work there. And so it just felt almost irresponsible if I didn't step into this role as it was presented.
And pride is not a problem as long as everyone can take prideful ownership of that place. It's only a problem when it becomes one person's.
Oh, totally.
And that. So the pride language is good to hear, but people tend to want to avoid it sometimes in this culture, given the rhetoric of pride.
But, yeah, that's true.
But no, but it's dead on, especially when it's shared.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So you guys brought some music, and some of it we just pulled up right now. So shall we start with your wedding song?
Sure.
Yeah.
And it's Kenny Loggins and Stevie Nicks, "Whenever I Call You Friend." Do you want to say anything about it, or about your wedding, before we play it, or you want to go in there afterwards?
It was just a really happy day. Very low key at Myers Park. Everybody brought really good food.
Yep. Celebrated with our children.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Mm-hmm. Cool. Here we go. Yeah.
myself within your eyes, and that's all I need to show the world. Everything I do always takes me home.
To WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guests on this hour are Helen and Chris Kaplan. So, tell us, how did you two meet?
Well, I first knew Helen as Priya's mom. That's Priya's mom.
Uh-huh.
So our kids were actually reading buddies in school. So my daughter, Allie, is older than Priya, and was assigned to Priya just randomly as, uh-huh, like, I think a fourth grader assigned to the kindergartner.
BJM.
Sure.
Yeah.
At BJM.
Right. Cool.
So that's how we met.
Mm-hmm.
And so when did you discover that there was something here?
Years later.
Yeah, we didn't really have much to do with each other. We were living on Buffalo Street a couple blocks. It was like two blocks, maybe?
About two blocks from each other.
Yeah, and we didn't really actually have much to do with each other outside of our kids having that experience.
Sure.
And years passed, and we started hanging out after I saw Chris in the toilet paper aisle of
in Wegmans.
Yeah. You kind of ran into each other in an unexpected place.
Yeah.
And you were open to each other.
No.
You weren't.
No, we became friends.
Oh.
And actually, we became really good friends, and we told each other things that, like, you would only tell a friend.
Right.
There was no romance there.
Right.
You know, because I told her things, if you're trying to woo someone, you wouldn't tell them
right.
these things. you know, I was telling her things as a friend.
Right, right, right. And I think there's a, I think there's also something that comes with age. Is the wooing thing is a little manipulative, or can be, whereas just the this is who I am, this is what I've been through, and you know it may change, but you know just kind of matter of factness is much more helpful.
Mm-hmm. And she was dating somebody else, uh-huh. So I mean that wasn't even an option,
right?
You know, dating wasn't on the table.
I wasn't attracted to Chris in a way that felt in any way romantic,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
She smelled good. That was what I noticed, but I didn't like. She had long hair at the time, but you know, and it whatever. It was like Salon Selective's type of commercial hair, you know. Yeah. But
and you were, but in meeting in the toilet paper aisle, you were open to friendship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Neat. And how did that evolve? What was the trajectory?
Well. The relationship that I was in was one where I was not being a very good person. I was having a lot of my own, I think, difficult emotional periods and mm-hmm. not being my best self.
Right.
And Chris was my confidant and often kind of giving me, you know, some disapproval or kind of, actually she irritated me quite a bit with her, you know,
her judgment.
Yeah, she judged me a little, but
I mean, but yeah, judgment is also perspective.
Yeah, well, it was perspective, and but it so there was that going on, and how did it progress, Chris? I'm trying to think.
I don't even know how it really progressed.
It's a curious question. No, how do these things progress?
Yeah. And the thing is we catch the peaks and the valleys and some of the shifts, but we don't catch it all. And the point is we often don't talk about these things in public. And the way we frame our relationships and our changes, the way we frame our openness to some things, as well as maybe that ship has sailed for me. That's not something for me anymore. When we talk about these changes, it helps people understand that our lives are cobbled together, constructed, not in any necessarily manipulative way, but in an intentional way. And we change our needs. Our needs change. Our skills change. Our desires change. And the people around us that we can dance with or work with or sometimes fight with and deal with the judgment and the perspective they bring, all change. And that's part of the show is kind of helping us to illustrate how people have lived through those changes. And when there's couples, kind of how you've done that together in as much as you remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys hadn't planned on coming on air together until you walked in the show today.
Absolutely not. I was like, hey, come on down. You can listen to me in the car radio while I'm in there talking. Come in. It'll be fun.
Yes. Well, you're a willing collaborator in this. Although you were a little bit hijacked, shanghaied, I guess.
You only live once, right?
Right.
YOLO,
right.
As the kids would say.
Yes. So, you both come to this relationship later in life, having had all sorts of experiences. In a regular kind of 1 hour show, where I would normally start after the introductions, is looking at the life that you value now, the person that you strive to live and be now. What are some of the past experiences? What are some of the things that have helped you to come to appreciate that have prepared you to live that life, or are by way of making you able to live that life now? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
And either one of you, whichever one's willing to step up.
I think that one of the most amazing things that I have going for me now is that I do not have to compromise who I am as an individual to be in a relationship with Helen. Mm-hmm. I feel that I am, that she completely accepts me for who I am. Mm-hmm. And I think that's...
Even when she tussles with you.
Oh, yeah. But I think that's something that comes later in life.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's okay for me to be who I am. I had to do some self-acceptance first, I think.
Right.
And I think that's the self-acceptance, actually my own self-acceptance, made it easier for Helen to accept who I am.
What got in your way? What were some of the major layers of the onion you had to peel back to kind of say that's not going to be a problem anymore?
That's a great question. I don't know. There was a lot of little things. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. So, and yourself, Helen.
Well, like I said earlier, when I was younger, I think my default mode of being in the world was to defer to others.
Right.
And so that led me down a road of often choosing relationships or partnerships where I wanted to please the other person and mold to kind of whatever I thought they wanted me to be.
Right, right.
And similar to Chris, I think there was some compromising going on that was not of the healthy variety.
Sure.
And I was really young. I mean, I got married young and had a baby young, and I didn't really know who I was. And when you do that, sometimes you develop like two trees develop next to each other. They twist around each other.
Right.
And then the ability to like
differentiate
separate. Yeah. is really not there. And so at some point I had to go through a painful passage of asking myself how I wanted to be in the world. And you know, could I be with somebody and be happy and be Helen?
Mm-hmm.
Or did there need to be shame around who I was? And I think I was carrying a lot of shame just by being me. And there wasn't anything wrong with me, but I always felt like I wasn't good enough. Or, you know, I would pick people who I felt were actually pretty critical of me.
Right.
Inherently, it's almost like I would draw those people near. And I decided before I met Chris that I would be with somebody who actually really enjoyed me.
Right.
And that was a conscious decision. Like, I needed to be with somebody who was actually really into me, and it was obvious,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I into them.
Right.
In a passionate, real way, which doesn't mean you'd love everything about the person or everything's perfect, but it's more like I wanted to feel like somebody really liked me,
mm-hmm,
as
mm-hmm.
well as loved me and appreciated the quirks that I think had often not been accepted previously.
Right, right. So in a certain sense, they saw you completely, or you felt that. I'm one of the things as you were talking that came to mind is sometimes we are skillful at relating to other people in a way that kind of manages the relationship, but it doesn't allow us to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you discover that there may be something more to life than just managing and getting by, then the shame or the guilt and the stuff kind of takes over, mm-hmm. and it becomes very hard. And that's the point to break. But it mm-hmm. is a very tough passage to make it through.
It is. It is. And I think realizing that it's okay to be yourself, and I'm really trying to help my daughter,
mm-hmm.
you know, realize like the people who you're going to want to be with are going to enjoy you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to like pretend to be something you're not or be some, you know, because oftentimes when we're younger, we think we have to be some sort of ideal for others to accept us. And it takes a while to realize that that's not interesting anyways. Who wants to be with a superficially, you know, perfect
superficially
person?
Ideal. Yeah. Excuse me. No, that's, may she learn well and young.
Yeah, I hope so.
Those are long lessons that take many of us decades to come across, but
mm-hmm.
good. No, I think that, yeah. Yes. Let's cut to music. What should we play next? I'm going to do the station ID while you sort that one out.
Okay.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guests on this hour are Chris and Helen Kaplan. Yes. Okay, here we go. We're going to play Coleman Hell and Two Heads.
There must be something in the water, and there must be something about your daughter. She said, I love you nothing but a monster.
My love ain't nothing but a monster with two heads. Ooh.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca, 91.9 in Watkins Glen. And this is the Made of Clay Report. And Helen and Chris Kaplan are our guests this morning. So I want to ask you a question about how has your relationship, your marriage, how has that been easier than you thought it would be? And how has it also been maybe harder than you thought it would be? What have you learned?
That's a good question. It's actually really easy most of the time, and that's surprising.
That's new for you.
Yeah, because I remember in other relationships and other times being really unhappy, for extended periods, and it was not necessarily because the other person was some bad person or that. Right. But there was just not a good fit, and not a good flow of communication, you know, or communication that was really riddled with problems that needed a lot of therapy and didn't get any, you know. So it's
and
nice.
Even if it got it, you might not have.
Maybe, not have worked anyways. But I think like Chris and I, the thing that's easier than I expected is we can be very honest with each mm-hmm. other, even when it's very painful, and even when we are hurt or angry or, you know, can kind of, it's real, you know, mm-hmm. it can be very hard. And at the end of the day, we're okay. Right. And that's a really interesting experience. to have some very honest, difficult, uncomfortable exchanges, and to know that we'll be okay.
Right, right. I mean, you just, what you're saying remind my experience of two very long-term and not healthy relationships was that no matter how hard I worked, it didn't change. And I couldn't find a way to make it change. Whereas in a relationship I'm in now, it is, even when it's hard, it's not hard a lot of the time, it's actually exciting. But when it's hard, it's really meaningful and it really needs attention, and attention pays off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I know deep down that Chris loves me, mm-hmm. and that she means me well. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes when things are falling apart in a relationship, or it's just not meant to be, people really too quickly lose sight of that sense of being loved by the other person no matter what. And that's
and if essential. You're not, it's important to be somewhat protective of yourself so you're not hurt.
Right.
Even more than you already are. But mm-hmm. that shell.
Right.
Is not good for a long life.
No, not at all. What do you think, Chris?
I think one of the important things that we have in this relationship is that we feel safe with each other. Mm-hmm. And that I don't feel like if the going gets tough, that Helen's going to leave me. Mm-hmm. And that gives you just such a sense of confidence and security that's really important. And it's kind of like it's the foundation of allowing our relationship to grow. So even when we do, and we stumble, we have hard times, nothing incredibly hard, but well, some of it's incredibly hard, but it's, but we're facing it together.
Right. Right. You're not at odds with each other when
we are not at odds.
Difficult, I mean, and when you're at odds with each other, you don't, my sense is you don't have to challenge the world. I mean, you have some space mm-hmm. and some time.
And we process things really differently. You know, I think I'm much more of a female in this relationship, like stereotypically, sure, right? Yeah. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. I'm definitely the Venus in this relationship, and I'm married to Mars. And that can play out like, you know, John Gray talks about where, you know, I want to process or I just want to talk and get listened to and not right. have somebody fix things. Mm-hmm. And Chris wants to be the fix-it committee.
Yep.
And I'm like, put down the hammer. Yeah. Like, this isn't Habitat for Humanity.
This is not
like,
a nail.
I'm a human being that just needs to blab, and I can, you know, she can
get... She has taught me, what is it, reflective listening? Uh-huh. She has taught me that that's what she needs, so I'm getting better at reflective listening.
And so, my sense is that for people who find themselves in a relationship that works, after the initial shock and awe of it, there's this sense that you have to, there's an adjustment. And you, how did you have to change? How did you change as a person that made this possible now? This relationship possible now? How had you changed, or how have you been able to walk together so that the accommodation of, you can say I have to listen reflectively. There's a certain shit-eating grin in that.
Oh, yeah.
but there's also a genuine affection for doing what is needed. They're both true.
Yeah. Well, she said it earlier. I do have her well-being in mind. You know, I want the best for her. And all of her little quirks, yes, I enjoy those too. Most of them.
How have you had to change, though?
But
I think it's interesting is that I wasn't in a relationship for many years until I met Helen. So I was independent. Mm-hmm. Like, I did everything for myself. And I really relied on myself for everything. And then when Helen came in, there were some things that she wanted to do or bring to the relationship. So there was some compromising that I had to do on my own. And I'm sure Helen had to do some compromising too. And it was a decision, you know, okay, you know, I'm going to compromise, you know, like maybe, I don't know. I'll just say like, maybe the dishes aren't done as often as I want them done.
Right.
You know,
Ms. Fix-It did not get it fixed when she wanted it.
Right.
Fixed.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But, you know, when you start to share a space, you know, you learn things or you compromise.
So was that time that you spent really being in charge of your own life without having to compromise so much with others? Was that what you had needed that you hadn't had earlier in life, or was that always who you were?
So when the relationship prior to Helen ended, I felt like I didn't go to therapy, but I did a lot of therapy on myself, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Did a lot of reflecting.
Yeah, and I like broke myself down, and I said, what parts do I like? What parts don't I like? What parts went away that I really liked, and I want to be able to bring those back. Sure. And I kind of built myself back up to being the person that I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, somebody who is giving back to the community, could, you know, has a sense of humor. At least I think I do, but, you know, you could disagree.
Hell no, I can't disagree. What do you mean?
you know, and just in my mind, I wanted to be a good person, somebody that I wanted to be around, mm-hmm. because I had gotten to a point where I didn't even want to be around me.
Right. You were sick of the life you ended up living.
Right. Right. So yeah, I became the person that I would want to hang out with, sort
mm-hmm.
of.
Mm-hmm. And surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. Yeah, actually, by the time Helen came around, so this is interesting. I wrote a list of things that would be ideal. Like my ideal partner would be, you know, and I wrote a list of probably like 10 things.
Uh-huh.
Ideals
are dangerous.
I tucked it away in a drawer and I forgot all about it.
Yeah.
And life went on and I didn't meet anybody. And I pretty much was like, forget it. You know,
right.
Maybe this is the life I'm supposed to be, you know, I'm mm-hmm. just supposed to be single. And fast forward, Helen and I met. We kind of figured out that there was more than just a friendship there. And then I think it was about maybe 2 years ago, I handed Helen a list. I found that list in the drawer, and I handed it to her. And I said, read this. And she read it, and she got mad. And I was like, what? What's wrong? And she's like, I can't believe that you gave me something you wrote about an ex-girlfriend. And I said,
no, sister.
No. Nope.
You made me jealous.
Oh, jealous of yourself. Now, that's an interesting contortion. Or jealous of a fantasy. Yeah. But it wasn't a fantasy.
It wasn't a fantasy. It was when I wrote it.
Right.
And if you go down the list, she is every one of those things on my list.
That's really powerful. I do believe that we have a kind of an inner homing mechanism, which kind of, I mean, this is part of my own training, and is that when you find those things that you have hope and trust in, and you can say them clearly, they will continue to guide your life even when you're not aware of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I should say, because I know they're listening, I've written a list for my children. And someday you'll meet that list too.
Uh-huh.
Actually, you've met a lot on the list.
Yeah, yeah,
you're good
yeah,
kids.
Yeah.
And I love you both.
That's sweet. That's sweet. So what has been harder? Where have you stretched in ways that you would not have anticipated or chosen in your relationship? Where have you grown that you didn't know you needed to grow?
My emotional availability.
You mean you have emotions?
I hide them, but yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah, no, it's emotional availability. Helen really needs to know that I have emotions around some things. And not just emotions like I'm really mad at this. Like emotions like I care, I love, I feel deeply about something.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. I think for me, I'm an obsessive kind of person. And I feel very deeply, and I can drive myself and those around me crazy with the ability to ruminate.
Right. And somebody needs to blow you out of your crater.
Right. I mean, I can just go into a space, and that's actually, I think, what makes me good at working in the addictions field is that I truly understand the obsession.
Yeah.
Although I am not a recovering addict, I might as well be in some ways because my mind is very similar. I can get fixated on things to a point that's very destructive. And, you know, one of the things that I've had to learn through living with Chris is how destructive it can be to another person when you don't discipline that obsessive nature and rein it in to really protect yourself and those around you from the pain and the anguish. There's like a hopeless place you can go to when you ruminate on things, say, that you can't change, or situations that are difficult that, you know, really aren't going to be fixed with constant rumination.
Well, but yeah, and it's what you said. When you are with people whose lives have been devastated and there is no fixing it, there is no undoing the past, being able to sit there without judgment, without, and to just kind of look at the burnt landscape and let it be, that is an incredible gift. And people will respond deeply to that. But you don't need to live with, you can't live with the ups and the joys and the wonders and stay in that space.
Right.
And so how do you get out of that?
So one of the things that I've had to really learn in my relationship and marriage with Chris is to be in the moment and to really enjoy what there is to enjoy, and to leave my work and some of the pain at you know, in another stays, place.
Yeah.
Because when I'm with Chris, I want to, I mean, not, it can't always be puppies and rainbows and sunshine, but I want to enjoy our time together. And you know, if there's going to be pockets where we can look at a sunset and really be fully present, or, you know, take a swim in Cayuga Lake and really feel the water, smell the whatever stinky smells are coming from Cayuga Lake. No, I mean, for real, like whatever, you know, just be there, be present. I want to do that. I want to be in a marriage where we can be present together. So she's really, I mean, that's really something I've had to learn to do more. And it's translated to my work as well. Like I try to just enjoy what there is to enjoy, even on a painful day.
Right, right. So yes. So you're not just the intense person at work, but you have some emotional variety.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. What should we play next musically?
How about Brown-Eyed Girl from My Pretty Brown-Eyed Wife?
Okay, here we go. In fact, that was the one that was sitting up.
When the rains came down in the hollow, playing a new game, laughing and a running, hey, skipping and a jumping in the misty morning fog with all our hearts a thumping, and you, my brown eyed girl. And whatever happened, the Tuesday and so slow, gone down the old man with a transistor radio, standing in the sunlight laughing, hiding high a rainbow's wall, slipping and sliding all along the waterfall with you, a brown-eyed girl. We used to sing sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la
la la dee da, la dee da. The other day, my, you have grown. Cast my memory back there, Lord. Sometimes I'm overcome thinking about making love in the green grass behind the stadium.
come with you, my brown eyed girl. And you, my brown eyed girl, do you remember when we used to sing?
Sha la 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 la.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guests on this hour are Helen and Chris Kaplan. So the way I like to round out this show is to ask the guests, what do you do individually to take care of yourself when things begin to kind of knock you off your center? What do you do to find your physical center, focus, your strength, your emotional clarity, your intellectual resolve or your understanding? What do you do, and how do you know you need to do it?
Mm. Well, I mean, for me, I need to be in a bubble, in my own space, away from human beings.
A little more introverted, a little more.
I have to, yeah, because I'm so public facing. My job is so with people, and I love it. But I know at a certain point that I have to be alone. And so that looks like me listening to a very riveting podcast, or me gardening, or me exercising, just something very solitary, where the likelihood of me interacting with another human being is very slim to none.
Right.
Other than my child or Chris's kids, I can do that when I'm overwhelmed or overloaded. Mm-hmm. But as far as outside of our little nuclear bubble, there are times where I just know I can't do it. So if we have social invitations or things to do, I just say, you go do that, Chris. I can't,
and
actually.
Just step out of it. Yeah.
I can't.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And how did you come? When did you realize you needed to take ownership of that decision? Because some people feel too embarrassed by not going to something they committed to. You know, when did you realize you needed to take ownership of that?
That's yourself? A good question. I think it probably was one or two times where I denied myself the self-care I needed and went to a function or a gathering in a place where I wasn't able to really enjoy the gathering. And I just couldn't really...
You connected the dots.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. And I said, everybody would live if I wasn't here. Like, this gathering would still occur.
Right.
And I'm not really bringing my best self anyways. So who the heck wants to be around me?
And you've used that expression a couple of times, my best self. How did you adopt that in your life? And what does that mean in your life?
Yeah, so for me, it's, you know, kind of from my... study of Nichiren Buddhism, you know, like my Buddha, Buddha nature. I want to be more connected to my higher self, the part of me that, you know, does what I can feel proud of and interacts with people in a way that brings goodness and health into the world.
Neat. So Chris, how do you take care of yourself?
I like to get out of my bubble. So we're a little opposite.
Yeah, yeah. You're the extrovert.
Yeah. You know, because my day job is very in a bubble, solitaire. I don't speak to a lot of people. So we're kind of opposite like that. But I'd have to say that there's a couple things that like really kind of just reset me. One is getting into water. Uh-huh. Like we had a pool. We got rid of the pool, but that was really great. And now we have a hot tub. And just getting in there, it just kind of resets me. And taking a motorcycle ride. Yeah, I just, that really just resets me, puts me in a happy place.
Uh-huh.
And building things.
Right.
When I can work with my hands and actually create something and have something, you know, produce something with my hands.
Right.
That's a good place for me to go to.
Now, as you're riding on that motorcycle, what are the kinds of spaces or the kind of motions that are the most satisfying for you to be writing? Is it going fast? Is it working through the curves? Is it
okay? So since my kids are listening, I won't. No, it's going fast. It's the freedom that you feel. Uh-huh. You're out there. You can feel everything. You know, from bugs to mist to you know the pavement is below my feet at 55 miles an hour. you know, you can smell the different smells. Sure. I love when you're like I can be going down 34. And you're going really fast, and you can just all of a sudden you smell like that house made brownies.
Yeah,
you know, it's just kind of cool because you're just experiencing a whole bunch of life that you wouldn't experience going in a car.
Right,
and it's the freedom, and the bike just becomes one with you. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. it's just an extension of who you are.
Right. Have you always been that grounded in your physical senses?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because that's usually something that's constant. In a person, you have it or you don't have it.
So and I have to say that's been a challenge for the last few years. I mean, I was playing softball and I had to have knee surgery, and taking away that physical really that was tough. And Helen was right there; she experienced it with me. It was probably tough for her too.
Right. No, when you're not getting what you need, it's hard for others to be around you. But it is what it is. And you said the sense of accomplishment from building, physical, you know, having something that's started, you do it physically and it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Does that obtain to your regular work, or is that more just a quality to the projects that you get to take on?
That's just the projects I get to take on.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, at work, I feel like I'm never done. So.
Right. No, I get it. I get it. So what have you learned about caring for each other that you didn't know about in a relationship that was important? I mean, you may have already answered this to some extent, but how is it that you consciously care for the other or ask for the other to care for you? You've talked about it in terms of reflective listening. You talked about it in terms of space.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. So you asked like two questions there. Sure. One is I'm really good at observing and seeing what Helen needs. Uh-huh. You know, so sometimes, and she's also observes me. So, right. And because we have like different things that we like to do, she likes to be in her bubble. And sometimes I like to get outside and, mm-hmm. and be
no bubble,
be
there.
Out of the bubble.
Yeah.
So we have found a balance between the two to kind of balance that out. The other thing that you asked was, how do you ask for help?
Uh-huh.
And I don't. That's probably a point of frustration for Helen is that I don't like to ask for help. I don't like to ask for much of anything.
Right. And are you proud of that, or are you? Is that just who you are? Or
I think
are you
frustrated
with that, or
all of the above? Can I answer D?
Yeah. In fact, when you said it, your tone of voice said to me all of the above.
Yeah. It is all of the above.
And is
it good? No. Sometimes it's awful that I don't ask for what I need, because then I just go along with the situation and I'm even more miserable at the end of the situation.
Or you're more angry and unable to
and
help.
Usually and it's angry at myself.
But once you're there, it's very hard to receive what would have been helpful hours or days or months before.
Right.
So you have to be very, so I've learned that I have to be very, very intuitive. And that's where Chris is Venus in our relationship. Sure. In some ways, because, you know, on Venus, you're supposed to be telepathic. Uh-huh. And you have to read the other person's uh-huh. wishes in mind. And if you can't do that, you know, right. you're going to have trouble. So I think really trying to think about what she might need and mm-hmm. what she's not asking for.
Right.
And this is, I think, very female-female kind of, like, you know, same-sex relationships, but I'm sure it plays out in heterosexual relationships as well.
Right, and gender is never stereotypically clear, you know.
Sure.
Like my inner Marlena Dietrich, you know, and other parts of my life, which are, you know, I mean, so.
Right.
But there is a quality in relationship where you... in a covenant relationship, we do for others what they cannot do for themselves. We ask for ourselves what we cannot do for ourselves. in the process of asking and meeting the other person's request, we learn skills that we didn't know we could learn. And that's the opportunity that you have in that situation. You won't be stuck always. You may never be good at asking for what you need, Chris, but you may actually do it sometime and you, in a way that you'll be proud of, but not consistently. And that's how we change in relationship. And that's why it's a relationship and not a contract, where you have services that you give each other, and if you don't get them, you're not happy. But that's a lot of unhappy marriages.
Right.
Yeah. They run more like a contract than a covenant.
That's right.
And what I see you guys living into in this awkward at times, but genuinely good-hearted, full of heart for each other, way is the covenant.
Definitely.
Chris and Helen, it has been wonderful to get to know you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been lovely to sit with you and talk.
What should we, should we close with the I Choose You?
Sure.
Or something else? Or is there another one you'd rather close with?
I think that's an appropriate one.
Because you have chosen each other.
It's true, for better or for worse.
We bought dishes together.
Somewhere.
This is it.
They're nice dishes, too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let the bow break, let it come down, crash. Let the sun fade out to a dark sky.
I have the most wonderful girl in the world.
Can't say I'd even notice it was absent.
Hey Sarah, it's Allie.
'Cause I could live by the light in your eyes.
I need you to help sing at my proposal.
Unfold before you. Strung together the very first words of a lifelong love letter. Tell the world that we finally got it all right. I choose you. I will become yours and you will become mine. I choose.
You've been listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this has been the Made of Clay Report.